This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
After 8 months of taking over federal power, a political analyst, Associate Professor Bridget Welsh, today said that there has been a general sense of disappointment with the performance of the Pakatan Harapan government.
So she said with race relations continuing to be an underlying factor in the Malaysian political landscape, Harapan has indirectly sidelined some of its existing support base. She drew a comparison with Donald Trump, saying that unlike US President Donald Trump, who had responded to his political base and hold on to power, in Malaysia we don't see that. So all sides are somewhat disappointed. Welsh was speaking at a forum organised by Help University.
So in this ongoing nation-building process in Malaysia Baru, Bridget noted that it's important to resolve the issue of leadership and move towards a peaceful transition of power from, of course, our current Prime Minister, Tun Dr. Mahathir Mohamad, to PKR President Anwar Ibrahim, as has been reportedly planned. And she said that the power struggle that seems to be going on for this succession is largely fuelled by the people around them.
She noted that it is a product of lack of trust between individuals within the system, and this has actually been quite destabilizing for the nation. Mahathir had previously reassured that he would honour his promise to hand over powers to Anwar.
The Port Dickson MP, meanwhile, had similarly called for an end to speculations of this rift between himself and Mahathir on the role of UMNO and PAS as part of the opposition front. Welsh said that the former has been rendered unviable following its election loss, while the latter's Islamist stand is untenable as a national party.
Former G25 member Taufik Ismail, who was also on the discussion panel, noted that it would be very difficult to break apart the culture of political patronage long associated with the largest Malay party in Malaysia.
So a lot of statements, I think, to extract from that article that was on Malaysia Kini. But basically, we've got this statement here that there is a general sense of disappointment, and perhaps that general sense of disappointment comes from, as we've observed previously, the U-turns. I think those are the kinds of things where you're not sure what pressures are being... Well, actually, you do know what pressures are being applied. But the point is... We have seen a lot of changes, a lot of U-turns, a lot of, decisions kind of being revisited because different parties then, you know, pipe up after announcements are made and say, hey, I'm not sure I'm happy about that. And so I think it's interesting that Bridget basically said that we're not seeing this response to the direct political base. And I think it's because, as we've said so many times, nobody is really 100% sure what led to Pakatan's victory in the first place.
Yeah, and I think the other thing is that they're trying to... It's like with their policies, they're trying to catch as many people as they can. So they want to appeal to this base. They want to appeal to that base. They also want to appeal to this other base. So I think they've been struggling to... And I think they're struggling with a sense of identity as to who they are as a party. And I think that's very difficult to come to because unlike UMNO, who functions sort of as a big brother to the coalition, I think on the Pakatan end, each of them kind of share the same power over each other. Yeah.
But there is also, I mean, you mentioned UMNO, but of course with UMNO, there is a very direct point to be made about how a lot of it is rooted in identity politics, right?
Yeah.
A lot of that, where the strength came from was this belief that, hey, we're going to look out for you, so vote for us. Whereas with Pakatan Harapan, I suppose it is the same thing that happens anytime people vote for change. You know, after you voted for that change, what next? But then you also have people who say, no, I didn't just vote for change. I voted for the manifesto.
Yeah.
So you have people who voted because they said, nope, what we had previously was not okay. We needed it to go. You have people who said, no, I liked what was in the manifesto. So every time a manifesto promise is not met, it's like, hey, but I voted for that. You have other people who voted, you know, almost entirely based on the presence of Tun Dr. Mahathir. So with all these different bases and different promises that need to be met and kept, I think it's hard to pander. Even if you wanted to pander, it's really difficult. And every time we open this up on the show, we tend to get deeply divided responses. So let us know what you think. Do you agree with Bridget's statement that there is a general sense of disappointment now that we're 8 months in and into a new year? Seems like the right time to talk about it. WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. We're crossing over now to Professor James Chin, who is the director of the Asia Institute Tasmania at the University of Tasmania. James, thank you for joining us on the show. So let's start with this. What are some of the main factors that have led to this sense of disappointment in the government?
Well, I think there are many, many factors, but I think you need to divide the so-called sense of disappointment into two distinct areas. One, of course, is the chartering class, people in the urban areas. Then you got the people in the rural areas. I'll start with the people in the rural areas. I think many people in the rural area were waiting for the new government to implement policies to ensure that the price of goods and services will go down. After all, in the rural areas, as many of your listeners will know, one key issue was the GST. Before the election, Pakata promised that we will get rid of the GST and immediately prices of goods and services will fall. That has not really happened yet in the rural areas. So a lot of the key commodities and essentials are still at quite a high price. In the urban areas, I think people are also disappointed, partly because their expectations were a bit high. They thought that if we got rid of the Barisan National stroke UMNO government, all the key reforms will be made immediately. So, for example, in the urban areas, people thought that, yes, the government will immediately get rid of the Sedition Act. They'll bring in the Independent Police Commission. They'll make sure that investigations into the disappearance of Pastor Cole will be taken care of. So there were lots of high expectations that there will be clear and clean reforms in the government. And that we will have a more accountable government. So I think when you talk about disappointment, you talk about the set of things that are very different in the rural areas compared to those in the urban areas.
So talk to me a bit about what's causing this stagnation that we're seeing with the party. Are their priorities misplaced, or is Pakatan afraid of alienating both sides?
No, I think you have to remember this is a very young government. If you look at the people who have taken over the government, more than 50% of the ministers actually have no administrative experience previously. So that's the first point. Second point is that one of the first things that the Pakatan government did when they got the government was that they started to clean up the civil service. So you know, right, in terms of service delivery, everything is dependent on the civil service. So the civil service went through quite a profound change, and I think that disrupted a lot of the service delivery stuff. Combined with the inexperience of the new ministers coming in. So, you know, you really can't expect much to change or to happen in the last 8 months.
And what about the next 8 months? I mean, at what point do we need to start? I mean, because we are always saying that they are a young government, and that is an accurate statement. They are also our first change of government. I mean, all these things aside, at what point do we have to start looking at what the government is doing on their own merits, you know, and not comparing them to the previous regime, not saying things like, well, this is the caveat, they are young, they're inexperienced. At what point can we start doing that?
I think a good point to start will be the midway through government. So slightly after 2 years, you really can do a real assessment after two budget circles. Or after 2 years, you can really see whether this government is going to deliver. You have to remember the first year is really all about cleaning up the mess or cleaning up all the misdeeds of the previous administration. Then you pass the budget, try to rescue the economy. So the sort of payoff that you'll be seeing in terms of reforms probably will be from the third year onwards. But the complicating factor in the Malaysian case is that now people are also having a wait-and-see attitude for the simple reason is that people expect there'll be another regime change in 2 years' time. People are waiting for Mahathir to step down, and a lot of people are saying that Anwar may not make it or he may make it. For whatever it is, there's still a lot of tensions in the system. So with another change likely, I think you'll see that a lot of people have a wait-and-see attitude.
So some political analysts are saying that 8 months is much too soon to make judgments on Pakatan Harapan's performance, especially since we've only ever been led by one coalition to, you know, for Pakatan Harapan, if anything, they will forever be a young party unless they also manage to lead for the next 60 years. So what's your take on this?
As I mentioned earlier, I think a good point to really assess the government is midway through the five-year term. So anything after 2 years, that's when they really have to show that whether they're capable of ruling. So as I mentioned earlier, I think it's a bit too early to try to assess them. I think they're still trying to get a grip. One of the big problems the Pakatan government faces is that there's very little coordination between ministers from different political parties. So that's the reason why you see in newspaper reports one minister from one party contradicting a minister from another party. Secondly, I think they still have some problems trying to get the civil service to do what they want. You have to remember, the Malaysian civil service is highly, highly politicized. The standard joke I tell people is that the Malaysian civil service used to be a branch of UMNO, so it really takes some time for them to reform the civil service. The only way they can really reform the service is when they win a second term. Then the civil service, especially at the top level, will realize that, you know, we're in for a profound change, and the change is for the long term. Because I suspect some very, very senior people in the civil service still think that this is a one-term government. So that's the reason why they're playing the slow game, as in not trying to do anything to help the Pakatan government.
Having said that, one of the elements that has been identified as a point of contention, I suppose, within this government has been the leadership tussle between Dr. Mahathir and Anwar Ibrahim. How much of an impact is that having on the actual governance of the country?
It has some impact, because what will happen is that people with really bright ideas who wants to do something, they may be holding off approaching the Pakatan government simply because they're waiting for the new government to come into being in 2 years' time. The problem is not so much the fact that there's going to be a transition. It's always understood, even before the election, that there will be a change of leadership midway. The problem is that we don't have a specific date. And it's very difficult for businesses, the NGO community, whoever, to try to plan ahead, especially, you know, if you plan to do something in the second half of the administration. So it's very, very difficult for you to plan anything if you do not know when the handover will be. Right now, the sort of dates that we're looking at is 2 years. Some people say it's more than 2 years. And there's even a vocal minority who said that Mahathir is the only one who can win the rural Malay votes, and therefore we need to retain him. So unless they come up with a very, a very precise date, you will keep hearing about tensions in the system.
As the Malaysian public, should we give allowances to the Pakatan government to find firmer footing?
Oh yes, like I said, you know, I think 8 months is a bit too early. I always strongly believe that regime change after such a long time of one-party state, you really need the new government to go through at least half of its term of life. So the Malaysian case is at least 2 years plus before you can really assess. The way I look at it is that you really need two rounds of the budget cycle before things will happen.
Having said that, I mean, we have also seen a lot of, I would say, miscommunications between the government and the public. We've seen a lot of internal party struggles make their way onto the front pages of newspapers. So with that in mind, there is the sense, and like we talked about earlier as well, the U-turns. So while I agree that it is far too soon, nevertheless, there are some things I think that are cause for, I wouldn't say concern, but a cause for people to feel like, oh, you know, this is a bit disquieting. So what measures do you think the Pakatan Harapan government can take to reduce the trust deficit that we're seeing in some segments of the public?
I'm not sure it's a trust deficit, but if I would advise the government, I would tell them to set up a very good communications unit. Right now, all the ministries have press officers. The press officers just report what the minister does. You need a communications thing to control the narrative, to set the narrative about what is the larger picture. What is the Pakatan government actually doing? So, for example, in the early on, in the first few months of the administration, a lot of Malaysians were very, very happy because they saw some of the senior leaders in the previous administration were being charged with money laundering, corruption, maladministration, what have you. So that was a key narrative, and it worked very well with the general public. Since then, basically, every ministry has gone their own way, so there's no central narrative about what the government is doing. So I think they really need to set up a very professional, high-powered communications thing to sort of set the narratives and to control the narrative. Because in today's social media age, it's very, very difficult. If you don't get in early, all sorts of stuff will come back to bite you.
James, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye. That was Professor James Chin, Director of the Asia Institute Tasmania at the University of Tasmania, talking about a comment made by political analyst Professor Bridget Welsh, that there is a sense of general disappointment with the 8-month performance of the Pakatan Harapan government. Let us know whether or not you agree. I know that we've done something like this before. We are often talking about assessing the government. And I guess we do that simply because we, like so many other people, have never experienced this before, have never experienced the ability to kind of assess and talk about it openly. And I suppose it being the new year felt like the right time to discuss.
And to be fair, we are holding this party to a higher standard than we used to hold UMNO to, because UMNO, for many of us, was just a constant stream of disappointments and scandals, to the point where, well, anything they do right now starts from a base of zero.
So Steve Chong of KK says it's a big disappointment. I mean, with recent press reports that the government is going to start imposing 5% sales tax on bottled water from this year onwards, I think we're going to have to check on that. Thank God also that Najib Razak, this is from Steve, abolished the toll to Klang before the BN government fell the following year. If not, there would still be tolls on the federal highway. If not for Dr. Mahathir in Pakatan, I don't think the people would have voted for Pakatan. Is that true? So like we said earlier, Steve, really no idea. And I don't think anybody has conclusively said that this was the silver bullet, this was the ultimate thing that secured the win. But thanks for that message. Stephen, meanwhile, says, I voted for the change. I voted for change, but the manifesto is the package to deliver the results. We hear from Raj, look at Anthony Lok. In 8 months, he has done great things with good results. No excuse for other ministers.
That's true. And I think the other one that I think has been praiseworthy has been Mestek Yobian.
Yeah, but those are the names that continuously come up. I mean, every time we talk about this, those two names, Gobind Singh Dio, these are the names that kind of pop up, but it is a cabinet of more than three or four ministers, you
it
know.
Is.
And so whether or not 8 months is enough, I think, is a good question. I mean, as Professor James earlier said multiple times over, there is that point about how two budget cycles and halfway through, that seems to be the right point to assess, because like you said, some plans might only come to fruition later on, not immediately.
And maybe even to consider, what else to consider is the fact that perhaps the current ministerial appointments, a lot of them might be, I don't want to say political, but a lot of them are more strategic. So with rumours abound of possible cabinet reshuffles, that might be another, you know, we might need to give them a bit more time to really assess how they're doing.
On Twitter, we have SR Zain saying, we need a brand new PM. So weighing in there on that issue of succession. Anwar Jumaboy says, it's not about being young or time. The government don't know where they're heading. So the focus on rooting out corruption to stay relevant. And that, I think, also speaks to James's point about clearer communication is required.
Yeah.
Because if you think that the government do not know where they're headed, I mean, what is that based on? I'm not calling it into question. I'm just saying that it would seem to me that that is a failure of communication more than anything else.
Yeah, apparently now they seem to be constant. They're misquoted on something every month, and that's concerning.
Yes. We have this message here from Chin Sun saying, bingo, Professor James, 8 months is too early to pass judgment. Why the need to find faults? No mention of the good deeds that have been done. I think the good deeds have been mentioned, but I also think it's not unfair to express disappointment. It doesn't mean that you have to say, I need you to get out, but it's more about, hey, do you guys think you could be doing a better job? I think it's fair for people to be able to say that.
I think we can do both. You know, we can say, hey, you've done these good things, but here's what you can improve on.
Lynette says, it will take more than 2 years to clean up 60 years of rot. Sabotage abound. People who vote for change are not willing to change themselves. That handout attitude. We need to be patient. All stakeholders need to change as well. I want to see where we are in that halfway mark.
I do. And I agree with Lynette's point about how people don't want to change, because for a lot of people, it's hard. Patronage politics is something that's really hard to get out of if you're stuck to that.
So if we're saying that the halfway mark is about 2.5 years and we're at 8 months, then I guess we're seeing about a year plus, a year, 9 or 10 months more. And that's going to be a more accurate point at which to assess. But that, I think, feels like a very long time for a lot of people.
So I assume that would be by January of 2021 where we can properly assess them.
Oh, that seems like a very long time. Jean Arden says, Dr. M's actions of taking in ex-UMNO leaders is displeasing to many. I do agree with James when he suggested that we need to give the government more time.
Heng Wing says, the Malaysian government hit rock bottom with PN. And there's... Sorry, hold on. There's another message coming in. Lam says, I hope radio broadcasters can give their fair views and say some good words about the government, not just follow certain political analysts who condemn with presumptions that bad news are always hit news, even though it is actually a minor issue.
In all fairness, Lam, if you heard, I think, our interview with Professor James, he was actually not condemning anything.
No.
I think he was saying basically that they've done fine and that they need more time in order to put things in play. And I do think that whenever the government has done well, we have, you know, kind of pointed that out as well.
Yeah, we have. And I know this is a very easy example to go to, but, you know, for example, Mahathir Malik, sure, he's made a lot of slightly interesting announcements in the past, but when where praise is due, like suggesting ideas with, you know, giving swimming lessons in schools, ending streamings, those are all very praiseworthy things. But when some things he does, like staying on as IIUM president, that's worth calling out. We call it out.
That's the thing. And now that we have the freedom to do so, and as does everyone else, I think it's only right. Let us know your thoughts. How do you feel about the government? Do you agree that there is a sense of general disappointment, or do we need to give them more time? WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.